Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
All right.
Welcome to another edition of Zero Block 30. It's a late night edition. It's a late night edition that we're going to get a little bit triggered about.
Whoa.
Just so you know, when you're pressing that play, it's a beautiful, beautiful Tuesday morning. Mm. You think you're going to get in, hop in with your favorite military pals, and you're going to have a funny conversation about porta potties and all that shit. Maybe.
Maybe
a little bit. But we're going to spend some time on some serious matters today as well, because we have three rounds in the magazine. Round number one, the Army has issued guidance for appropriate use of emojis so troops can avoid sexual assault and harassment charges, and we have some question about this. Round number two, there was a remarkable piece by the Washington Post about the war in Afghanistan. It's been all over the place on social media. It's been covered in the news extensively, but we want to give you our take because some of the things that have been said by high-level leaders about the war in Afghanistan, every junior troop in the world knew. If you served in Afghanistan and you were an 04 and below, you knew what Rumsfeld was talking about behind the scenes, and we are going to dive deep into these fucking papers because we are all upset. Kate is so
upset. And I've been drinking.
She's got a little bit of coping juice. That's what the French call whiskey.
Con's
being the responsible one. Mm-hmm. He is not. He is sober as the day is long. I have had a couple sips on Grandpa's old cough medicines, but we're going to keep it light.
No,
we're not going to keep it light.
I'm going to get fucked up, and yeah, I'm going to cuss it on here. Duty balls.
Yeah, we're going to do all kinds of stuff. It's a late night edition. Round number three, Santa Claus is causing a commotion on Fort Belvoir after he put his uniform on and took a picture at the commissary to greet shoppers that had a little bit of religion behind it, and people were up in arms about
it. We got
that.
Politics, religion, sexual assault emojis. What an episode.
And I want to say this before we get into round number three on the actual pod. If you go at Santa, fuck you.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What if he doesn't call you back after a beautiful, beautiful night together?
Well, he would. You know who he always calls back? He always calls back Mrs. Claus because Santa is like our smart listeners who has those Roman swipes.
Oh,
whenever
buddy.
He's been at the toy factory. Mm. She's been there, too. People don't talk about that.
She's got her own toy factory.
She is a manager at the toy
Maybe take that juice away from Kate for right now.
Okay.
Does she have Sex Toy Factory.
That's what she was getting at.
Well, I've said it on Podfathers. You should listen to that show as well, that Santa and Mrs. Claus.
This was a big yikes, by the way.
They fuck big time.
Oh, for
all right.
Sure.
I mean, yes. What are you supposed to do?
You're in the North Pole. You only really have a job for like, nobody thinks about you until after Thanksgiving.
Bro, he's making toys year-round.
He's not. He's a supervisor.
Right.
He has plenty of time to supervise.
Fuck.
So he comes home from the toy factory. Gives Mrs. Claus the look.
Oh.
Santa, getting older, he's not used to seeing them Santa titty pop.
Like no.
Mrs. Claus
and they still
pop.
Do, by the way.
Yeah, and so he just nuts too fast. Like, that's Santa's biggest issue. It's nutting too fast.
Well, how would he solve that?
Well, he would solve it by going to GetRoman.com/zero, because if he does that, he would know that they are clinically proven to last longer in bed. I mean, you're rocking, the elves are going to come knocking. And
oh, my God,
the boots,
yes.
The little tiny boots are going to be all over the place.
You know what keeps the North Pole so hard? And
dicks.
Strong. Roman swipes.
That's true. Swipes are great. They will not transfer to your partner, Mrs. Claus, and they can last longer without worrying. They're super easy to use. Just take the swipe out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. That's all you have to do. You go to GetRoman.com/zero. You can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose the monthly plan. If you use the link GetRoman.com/zero, GetRoman.com/zero, there's zero reasons not to fuck your lady good.
Oh, yeah. You can be a real ho-ho-ho this season.
So, There's certain things that I look at in the social media landscape that I didn't have to worry about as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think whenever I was in emojis were a thing.
The tail end of when I was in. I got out of active duty 2011, and iPhones had just come on the scene. But I didn't have an iPhone until later versions, so I don't even know if the first iPhones had emojis.
Well, even if you didn't have emojis, you for sure sat through endless, endless rounds of Sharp training, which... something that, we all roll our eyes at any death by PowerPoint thing, but turns out if you read the news at all, actually a needed thing. It's sexual harassment, assault prevention, that kind of stuff. But there's a particular slide that is making the rounds where they show inappropriate emojis. So they have
and
this...
Before we really dive into it, these people are emoji experts. Like the ones that put this together... We work in social media. We are constantly like in the know about things that are happening with phones. Some of these emojis that they are saying are sexual, I would have never.
No, well, not at all. But this is a great education.
The only two, the banana I've used in a sexual way, the eggplant I've used in a sexual way, and the water, like the three little squirts of water I've used in a sexual way. Mm-hmm.
But there's some on here that are even better. So let me just through. So penis, they have the eggplant emoji. That is like learning how Dick runs over Jane. Like that's like the basic elementary levels of
that's emoji
emojis.
101.
Right, that's the one we all
know. That's entry level.
Honestly, you have our guy Barstool Trent's dick emoji, which is the corn on the cob.
Iowa, shout out Iowa. Yeah,
then you have a banana. This one kind of creeps me out. The next one they have on here, a baby bottle.
That's weird.
As a dick?
That's weird.
That's weird. If you're like, I got a big baby bottle. Nobody wants that.
That's inappropriate.
The next one's a rocket ship. I'm okay with. Lipstick, I'm good one. The next one I would have never thought, but it's so appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
The chicken.
Yeah, the cock.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. If a guy ever was like, hey, babe, you want some of this weekend? And sent me a lipstick like a dog's red rocket.
That's what I was thinking of. A dog's red rocket. Because it kind of pokes out like that.
The only sex that I will consensually accept from a guy are the corn, eggplant, banana, rocket, and cock. Yeah. But the lipstick and baby bottle are out.
I don't know if you saw it. People were complaining that we haven't been doing as many doggy bags lately.
We haven't done a doggy bag in a very long time.
Do you want me to give you a doggy bag on the lipstick emoji?
Yes. Sure. Cue the DMX.
Occasionally, a dog's lipstick can get stuck outside of the sheath that it's there. Veterinarians will tell you that if you're... because it can actually get stuck outside. You legit get stuck outside, you pour... sugar, like you sprinkle a little sugar on the dog's dick, the dog will lick his dick down and it'll get it back inside the sheath.
That's like a really messed up Mary Poppins. Just a spoonful of sugar makes the penis go down.
It's true.
Or you can just
jerk your dog off and let it go.
Oh, all right.
You didn't have to go there.
Yeah. Sorry about
but
that.
But wait, I thought we were done. There's more.
There's more, yeah.
There's also the electrical socket, which the snake.
Give her the plug.
Right.
Give it a plug. Okay, that makes sense.
Or him.
The snake.
Him.
True. Excellent point, Kate.
The snake.
That makes sense.
Snake is
the best one. The next one, I think, is the best one.
The mushroom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then we have the kebab, the cactus. I don't know if that's for like, I shaved my balls 2 days ago. It's going to be a little prickly. Mm-hmm. And then the lollipop. Yeah. So those are all the only ones I would have recognized as a sext from somebody. If I had like a staff sergeant send me 15 mushrooms, I'd be like, I guess we got to go field day some mushrooms off the front lawn of the barracks. I would not get that. But now I know to look out for that kind
of
stuff.
But they also have a group of fucked up testicles because they went with a bunch of grapes.
Yeah, multiple, more than two grapes in that bundle.
And shockingly on here, the testicles is not represented by the cherries.
That would have made more sense.
That could have made instead
the two
they have
beers. Two beers. That doesn't make any sense.
The pig snout.
Pig
with two
snout.
Holes. Mm-mm. Okay. Two paws or the belt. So I guess anything that comes in pairs.
Except
they're saying
for the cherries.
Except for the cherries. What do we got for?
Oh
butts?
Well, lest we forget, if we go to the top right there, the breasts.
Oh,
those are the cherries.
So we got camel humps, cherries, glasses, and a video cassette for breasts. I didn't know.
I don't get that one.
Let's take it to the trunk. What do we got what do we got in the rear? What's the gear?
Right.
In emoji land.
And
Peach.
Oh, okay. No, wait. Is that the
peach?
Sorry.
Sushi, you guys are killing me. Peach, sushi, donuts.
Oh, that's a bottom left.
Squid, Target, like a big acorn nut, and then a lock and key. So I guess that's for like...
Basically, it's sad that we have to go through these because you really do. Like, if you go in and you have like a sexual harassment talk and be like, "Well, did your staff sergeant, did your fucking sergeant first class, did they teach you about this?" And be like, "Well,
no,
sergeant major.
I didn't know what I was doing.
I had no idea that whenever I said like, 'Do you want to suck my banana?' I was referring to my penis.
Right? I thought she just wanted to maybe go to the farmer's market with me
that this young
week,
specialist
summer.
Looked like she was potassium deficient.
But the worst part is looking at all these wacky emojis that they're teaching this in training to say, you know, if somebody's creeping on you, these are some things they might be sending you to refer to. If somebody sends you the cardboard box emoji, they might be talking about your vagina. That kind of thing. So I guarantee you, looking at this wide array, there is a woman in the military out there who has received one of these from someone, for sure.
I would, I would never, ever assume if somebody sent me the gray moon face that that means that they just busted a nut.
Yeah, that's orgasm face. I think that's because you get tired afterwards, which is very clever.
Okay.
If you think about it.
Some
all right,
these are
moon's
a little too
out.
Deep. For emojis.
I know. Yeah. Stonehenge,
I think it's
microphone.
Just good practice. Just don't use emojis while in the military.
Yeah.
I disagree. Disagree. All right, let's move on to round two.
All right, away from the very sexy lipstick emoji, sprinkle some sugar on it, put it away, because we're moving on to something a little more serious. I'm moving on to a sad face emoji now, and a mad face emoji, because that's how this made me feel for round number two. We're talking about the Afghanistan papers that were released by the Washington Post today. After several years of fighting to get these papers and after two times going to federal court to fight for them, which is insane to me in the first place, but basically there was a federal project examining the root of the failures in our longest armed conflict in U.S. history with more than 400 direct roles in the war. So basically generals, diplomats, aid workers, Afghan officials, people from across the entire spectrum of this 18-year war now, giving unrestrained and unrestricted interviews. Here's exactly how I really think and feel. And this was part of SIGAR, which these reports basically, Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, it was created by Congress in 2008 to investigate waste and fraud during this extremely long war in Afghanistan. And to the surprise of no one, after millions spent in several years, the resulting report let out the harshest criticisms and omitted 90% of the interviews. So basically, since 2008, SIGAR, which I'll call it for short, has been investigating the war, getting these in-depth interviews, but keeping them secret. Basically, all these failures, all these things that were wrong, the corruption, a competent Afghan army and police force, a thriving opium trade, all these things were kind of kept in the dark and the American people were being lied to. Well, again, finally, the Washington Post fought to get these papers released, and now we have them. So it's one of these things where we've talked about on the show before where, no shit, it's a quagmire.
Right.
And anybody from the lowest PFC boots on the ground, Schmuckatelli, the first time outside the wire in Afghanistan could probably tell you that like, I don't know. I was texting my dad today after I read it, and I was like, "Dad, do you remember the letters I sent you when I was a Lance Corporal on my first tour where I was like, 'Dad, here's a couple things I've been seeing,' and like maybe I wasn't supposed to be doing that then, but like this
probably against the OPSEC,
but
whatever.
But like this seems insane to me. Like, man, that the Afghan guards are like robbing the civilians every time they go through the checkpoint and watching Afghans like beat civilians with the buttstocks of their rifles and like all this stuff. I'm like, this doesn't feel right. I'm seeing all this corruption, all this stuff. So basically, $978 billion with a B dollars later, not including VA care for OEF and active vets or CIA costs. So we're looking at $1 trillion here.
Right.
2,300 U.S. killed.
And I think that before we get into some of the stats about what actually took place in the papers and what we break down the Afghanistan war, I think these papers are important because it highlights 366 names. There's 366 names that are known. All of these are major players in the U.S. government at the time. It spans not just one presidency, not just two, but into the third presidency of this war. Both of the first two presidents were two-term presidents, which is insane. So we're not talking about just off the top you would see 6 years, like, or for 12 years for three presidents. You're not dealing with that. You're having Bush's both of his terms, essentially. Obama's both of his terms. Most of the first part of Trump's first 3 years. 66 names, 62 were identified by the SIGAR, and they go into further further explanation about what actually happened. The Post said that if they waited for Judge Amy Berman Jackson of the U.S. District Court in Washington, if they waited on her decision, it could take years. To get to the point where she make decisions. But the Post, this is the most telling thing of the why the Post sued twice. The Post is publishing the documents now instead of waiting for a final ruling to inform the public while the Trump administration is negotiating with the Taliban and considering to withdraw 1,300 U.S. troops. They're saying there has been documented over and over again throughout the past almost 20 years now of time and time again high-level U.S. officials knowing that the war is not going anywhere, them calling it a quagmire and continuing to go down the path, and we're still fucking doing it.
Well,
still.
That's the thing. The Cigar Report was almost used, even though the purpose was to investigate waste and fraud in the war zone, it was almost used to twist things and keep the wars going.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, again, we're at basically over $1 trillion with a T, over $1 trillion in cost, 2,300 U.S. service members killed, almost 21,000 U.S. wounded, over 60,000 Afghan security forces killed, countless Afghan civilians, an estimated since 2001, everybody all together, 157,000 people killed in this war.
Jeez.
So, but if you read the way things came out and the way that we've been getting the press on it, that number would startle a shit ton of people, because what we're really was told in the Cigar Reports was not told to the American people. 90% of those interviews were omitted, and what was released was dense bureaucratic prose, and they said like an alphabet soup of government initiatives. It was confusing. People didn't know, and people are comparing it to the 1971 Pentagon Papers. Same thing. People were misled about the war, and next thing you know, we're in a quagmire about it. So military commanders, a couple things that they really took from this report, now that the Washington Post is able to get it and look into it: our military commanders often could not figure out who we were fighting or why, which made things difficult for the troops on the ground who couldn't tell friend from foe.
Well, yeah, geez, if the 3- and 4-star generals don't even know who to go against, how am I, as you know, a brand new lieutenant or a company commander, supposed to tell my guys on the ground who they're fighting against?
And that's what really, whenever we first used to praise Mattis a lot on this show, whenever he would talk about you need to be able to identify who you're fighting, what the mission is, how you're going to accomplish it. They haven't been able to do that in a long time. Listen to this statement that the Afghanistan Papers unveils about President Bush. This was on April 17th of 2002. The history of military conflict in Afghanistan has been one of initial success, followed by years of floundering and ultimate failure. We're not going to repeat that mistake. That was in 2002.
That's, yeah. Mm. And only 6 months into it, military commanders are complaining. Who are we fighting? Because in Afghanistan, you had warlords, you had drug kingpins, you had the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, you had so many different groups. And sometimes it was just local disgruntled. Like, you didn't even know. And so it's difficult. So
Cons, as a company commander, let me put you in the seat of a company commander. If I am the battalion commander, I'm the regimental commander, and I give you a mission. Your mission in Afghanistan is to retaliate against Al-Qaeda and prevent a repeat attack of the September 11th, 2001 attacks. That's a clear mission.
Mm-hmm.
When do you think the last time a company commander has been given that clear of a mission?
In Afghanistan?
Yeah.
When was that one given?
Yeah, 2002.
Yeah, so close to 2002. I mean, I'm sure that there's been little missions here and there where it was a very clear objective on why we wanted to do that. But the whole overarching mission of what we're doing in Afghanistan, I don't think it's been that crystal since 2002.
And you're right, because in 2015, an unidentified U.S. official said that with the Afghanistan-Pakistan strategy, there's a present underneath the Christmas tree for everyone. By the time you're finished, you have so many priorities and aspirations. It was like there's no strategy at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because everybody has these different things. What are we going to accomplish? What looks good? Is it democracy? Is it doing things for women's rights? What is the successful reason why we are in Afghanistan? And when you have a million reasons, it's like a flavor. When you have millions of flavors in one pot, you have no flavor at all.
Mm-hmm. It sounds great, but really, right, it's not doing anything. And speaking of, is it democracy? That's one of the big things they're pushing. Well, part of the thing is building up the infrastructure. COIN, part of counterinsurgency, is building up the infrastructure so that they don't need to rely on the Taliban. So another thing that in all these interviews they were saying is absolutely not working was one of our biggest priorities was U.S. officials were trying to create a democratic government, almost like a blueprint of the one we have in Washington, in Kabul, from scratch, which was a completely foreign concept to Afghans who are used to tribalism, monarchism, communism, and Islamic law. Things that we just completely... And again, these are things that as a Lance Corporal, writing to my dad, being like, we're trying to put our system on them. We're trying to put a garbage route in the middle of this bazaar. They've never had that. They don't have a...
And like, it's not because you're Thomas Paine, right? Like, it's like...
Right. You,
it's not like we are great political thinkers and things like that. It was common sense.
But, like, even down to the smallest local government, we were trying to, like, set these, like, infrastructure things
that
in place.
Rude. You might be just, Thomas Paine.
I could be Thomas Paine. another thing, another huge part was, well, another thing we're doing to build them up is all these aid projects. So, like, schools, infrastructure, canals. And they were put in, though, way faster than security could keep up with. So they would build tons of stuff, spend millions and millions all over the country. And then it would just get destroyed.
Yeah.
Because there was no security.
There is very much similarities. This is the Afghanistan papers, but I can only really speak to my experiences in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
We would go through different places in a city called Karma, and they were putting in different, like, water canals, like, to try to get water, running water to the different houses. Without fail, they would put an IED underneath one of the canals or one of the pipes, and they would blow it up. And be like, okay, well, let's get the money together and do it again.
Yeah.
Like, how many times have we done this? My company commander, he said, they've done this six times. This is the third time I've done this on successive deployments in this same exact area.
I believe that. And then you think to yourself, how many times are we going to chase our tail? How many times is a dog going to chase its tail before you realize, all right, maybe we should go in a different direction? But the problem with that is someone at some point has to step up, take ownership, and say, all right, this failed.
Well, luckily for us, that happened in 2009 when President Barack Obama said, the days of providing a blank check are over. It must be clear that Afghans have to take responsibility for their security and that America has no interest in finding endless wars in Afghanistan. The days of providing a blank check are over. We probably gave them another one this month.
We probably did, because aid workers that were interviewed said it's like dumping kerosene on a dying campfire to keep it alive. That's what we were doing with money. Looking at the statistics, 90% of the money we gave to aid projects was lost to corruption and all sorts of other things, or security failures or all these other things. And with all that money coming into a country that had none, and just the way we were just throwing it around so blindly, it became a kleptocracy, which is fatal to any. I mean, basically, if corruption was a plant, we were covering it in fertilizer and saying bloom.
Corruption was a plant, and it was a poppy plant, because poppy farmers were paid by the British government to destroy their crops, which was encouraged them to grow more the next season. It's like they view things on there's this idea of Platonic view of the forms, where there's a perfect form of everything. There's a perfect form of a basketball. There's a perfect form of a baseball. There's a perfect form of democracy. This was the perfect form of, if we give you the money to destroy your poppy seeds, you will never do this again.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not true. If you give me money, like if you came, chaps, if you get rid of all your weeds, I'm going to give you $1,000. Buddy, I'm feeding those weeds the next year so you come back and give me $2,000, because I got way more weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, excuse me, a little whiskey on the throat there. The U.S. spent over $9 billion with a B to stop opium and poppies there. And guess what? Last year, Afghan provided 82% of the world's opium still. I know when I was there, a big part of my first deployment, I spent several months at this outpost where we had tons and tons of these massive bags full of wheat seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And we would tell all the – because I was in an area that was the main thing, was poppy and heroin. Mm-hmm. And we would, and marijuana, and we'd say, stop growing that stuff. We'll give you all this seed for free.
I wish you would have said it was oat seeds, because then I could have made like Marine Corps classic being sexist, making you guys sew.
Making us sew. Oh, buddy. But no, it was wheat. It was wheat. And we would interview people. I spent a lot of my time sitting with the interpreters and chatting up people who are waiting their turn to get the seed. Mm-hmm. And they were always laughing. They were like, you know, we're just taking all this to Lashkargah and selling it. Like, we're not even planting this shit. Like, LOL.
Like,
thanks for
honest.
Yeah.
And then what are you going to do? You know, Corporal Kate, what are you going to do about that?
Ride or dad. Yeah.
I was always like, well, have fun.
You just wait till I tell Joe.
Yeah, you, I'm staffs aren't, you. This guy's stealing his seats and Lash Gargoyle's staffs aren't. Yeah,
one,
no.
One real quick fact that I found interesting, the fact that we've allocated $133 billion to build up Afghanistan, so all these, you know, efforts to give them seed or build infrastructure. That is more than we spent, adjusted for inflation, of course, than all of Western Europe with the Marshall Plan to rebuild Western Europe after World War II. That's crazy. To build an entire continent up again, we spent more in this one country.
And this is the thing.
That's a lot of freaking seeds.
We're listing all this off and we're reading all this off because no matter how terribly things were going, all these things were going on, but you wouldn't really ever know it because here in the U.S., a rosy picture was being painted of it. They only told the stories of progress, and they rarely told the stories of failures. And even when there were failures, they were so good at spinning it. Yeah. So I took a couple examples down here. Suicide bombings. They would say, oh, that's an example of the Taliban's desperation. We're crunching them down so hard. This is their last resort. A rise in U.S. troop deaths. They would say, oh, that's proof that American forces were taking the fight to the enemy. Attacks getting worse. Oh, that's just because the Taliban has more targets because our presence is so strong there. They took every negative, turned it, flipped it, and fed it to the American public with a spoonful of sugar, not the lipstick kind. but basically, and time after time in these interviews, a thing that a lot of higher leadership was saying was, well, truth was very rarely welcome at the top. Bad news was unwelcome. So if you...
Yeah, there's one example that they gave very specifically in this where they say that it was okay to say, oh, an MRAP ran over a kid. It's not okay to say we are failing systematically of what we are doing in this area of operation. And I think a lot of it honestly comes down to how NCO reports are done, how evaluations for your job as a commander are going. You're not going to say we are failing.
No.
You are going to say we took it over, it was bad, and we made it better. Even though you can see the cyclic rate of how like everything is, it's so cyclical in nature. In October,
I was just going to say, it's our nature as a country, I think, to whenever we don't want to admit defeat. We are a great country, a strong country, but to admit defeat, that means somewhere along the line, somebody screwed up, but who wants to, you know, hold that bag and say, raise their hand, you know what, this is on me. Clearly, it's not one person that is the reason that we're still in Afghanistan all these years later. It's a collection of people, but it's very difficult to be the one to say, like, all right, it's me.
Eventually, you got to rip the Band-Aid off, and I think there was a very, as people know, like, we take shots at President Trump when needed, and we give him credit whenever it's needed. There was a point, that I forget who said it, but they said, remember when we withdrew all the troops from Syria and left the Kurds out to dry? What do you think the social media outcry would be if we just automatically just withdrew everybody from Afghanistan in a second? Like, there is two parts of that story. Like, I think that would be the correct mission to do, like, to withdraw everybody. But I want to go back because in October 11th of 2001, President Bush was asked by a reporter, can you avoid being drawn into a Vietnam-like quagmire in Afghanistan? This was October. We'd only been there for about – not even been there, really. Like, we just got there a couple days before that. And he said, President Bush said, we learned some very important lessons in Vietnam. People often ask me, how long will this last? The particular battlefront has to last as long as it takes to bring Al-Qaeda to justice. It may happen tomorrow. It may happen a month from now. It may take a year or two, but we will prevail. And then, as soon as November 27th of 2001, Secretary Rumsfeld joked at a news conference, all together now, quagmire.
Well, speaking of Rumsfeld, he kept his own personal notes, which were revealed, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them throughout his time. And in his own personal notes, the main theme is that he knew it was a dire situation and a massive failure. And then one of his biggest personal thing where he's really listing off all the failures, months later, he releases a paper titled Afghanistan, 5 years later, highlighting more than 50 promising facts and figures about the war in Afghanistan. This is the thing that I was reading about this, and Dan Lamothe, he summed it up, because when I first read these papers and when I first read through it, my reaction was, no shit. Anybody on the lower level, this is stuff we've all been screaming and bitching about for years. But it seems to, like, it's frustrating because we all knew it. And we're like, well, I didn't go to Harvard. I didn't go to the Army War College. And I'm telling you this, that this is a fucked up quagmire. Why aren't they seeing it? But Dan Lamothe tweeted out today, he works for Washington Post, I'm seeing lots of you don't say in my timeline, which was me. I was like, yeah, no shit, guys. There has been derision and disgust with endless turned corners for years. But laying it out in this level of detail with names named is important to watchdog journalism. And CJ Chivers, president, he said the power of this report has nothing to do with surprise. There's little surprise here. Bleak, hard-earned, and well-informed assessments of the war's failures and Pentagon misrepresentations have been common for years. The power is in having the gaslighting thoroughly exposed. And I hope, I was saying to Chaps earlier today, I was in Getty Images looking for pictures of tits and asses and men with sexy big old honk and eggplant dicks so that I could write a blog about this. I was like, what if I put some of the words from this report on these like dicks and boobs and blah, 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 so that the regular average audience actually reads it and cares? Because, again, this is stuff that is not new to anybody who's been there, but it's maddening because we knew that they would just keep lying anyway. My family back home, seeing with my own boots on the ground outside the wire, and I listed on a thread of tweets today, like maybe 8 or 9 big ass failures that I saw on a personal level as like a young idiot. But hearing back home, reading the paper and stuff like that, and getting clips that like everything's fine. Everything's great over there. Everything's fine when it wasn't. And yeah, it's like, I'm not crazy.
All great on the Western Front.
Yeah, right. This is so fucked.
And honestly, at this point, I hate to say it, but if you're the average American, you don't care anymore. This is not even, and you talk about the type of blog you would have had to write to get people's attention, because yeah, I don't think the average American cares about that we're still in Afghanistan. I think unless you were in the military or you were affected by someone who was injured or, God forbid, killed, this doesn't affect you in such a way that you would be moved to do anything about it.
And it's strange because this paper is 34, 35 pages long, and you open it up, you're like, 34 pages, my God. It's almost like it's too long for the American subconscious to like really gravitate to, which is crazy that you can't read that much about a topic that this is, because it's laid out almost like a closing argument in a case where it's like this happened, where there's certain times where you hear things about what's going on in Afghanistan. You're like, yeah, that is messed up, but we are doing this, we are doing that. I think everything that's going on in Afghanistan can be summed up pretty succinctly by one tweet that I read today. Because every major conflict in American history that has ended usually gets a monument in Washington, whether it be the stoic image of the people in the Korean War going through the swamps, whether it be the flag raising at Iwo Jima and on and on and on. Our monument for Afghanistan and Iraq, especially Afghanistan, should just be a monument with corners that are infinite that we have turning another corner.
Yeah, it's endless. And not to keep dragging it out, but I think one of the biggest things that I think a lot of people who were outside the wire and like booths, anybody who's in Afghanistan who like lost friends and stuff, a big thing was like, besides missing your friend and wishing they hadn't died, was like the moral injury of it, like the why. And ultimately, the only comfort I find is that because they would have done it time and time again for the man or woman to their left and their right. But in the bigger picture of things, I've really struggled with the why.
I think that why wasn't established. We had a very clear why. And I agree that in 2001, President Bush was correct in sending troops to Afghanistan to retaliate for 9/11. Now, beyond that, there was not a clear why, obviously, because it's 2019 and we're still there.
Well, I guess I'm just
there.
Getting at that's
there wasn't a clear why established.
I got very emotional reading it today, and I got very upset reading it today. And I know from just looking online that I'm not the only one who felt a big wave of emotion, because it's such a disillusionment when the people that you trust to look out for you, the higher leadership, there they are behind the scenes saying, "What a failure! What a failure!" And there they are standing in front of the troops saying, "Look at you guys. What a success. Here's all the great things," when they didn't believe it. When all this pomp and circumstance and all this talk was just empty and right to our fucking faces and to the public and the Americans' faces. And the family's faces of the people who aren't coming home, like, that to me is, there is so, what was the term you used for it today?
Institutional cowardice.
Institutional cowardice is so insane to me, the amount of it. And that I think today now, the new why that I'm struggling with is, man, it's something we kind of just, we knew it, but we couldn't do anything about it. Like, why?
If you have the gumption, if you have the gall to send American troops to a foreign land, you sure as fuck better know why you're sending them there.
Mm-hmm. And you sure as fuck better have the fucking balls to step up and say, we fucked up. Like, and to say these things that you're saying behind the scenes, to say it up front and to the American people and be like, this is going to suck and I'm going to get shit on.
You're asking people to show battlefield courage while you're not willing to...
be on the battlefield,
take
themselves.
Some licks in the newspaper.
No,
that's essentially
fine.
What happens.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. So there is this little story going around. We're going to end on kind of a positive note. I guess kind of a positive note. Because if you've been anywhere on a base, like, everything gets dressed up in camouflage. Whether it be Jesus, whether it be Santa, whether it be the Easter Bunny, they're going to be wearing some combat boots. Mm-hmm. No matter where they're at.
For sure.
This story is no different. It's at Fort Belvoir in Fairfax, just outside of D.C. A blow-up Santa Claus on an Army base is deflating holiday cheer by promoting Christianity, an active group complains. Let me set the scene here. This Santa Claus, he looks to be in the Army. I think he's an Army guy.
Yeah, looks to be in great shape.
Very trim belly for a jolly fella. He's also standing by a raccoon, which is weird. The raccoon has a Santa hat as well. And he's holding a sign that says, God bless America. Well, a military religious freedom foundation and their founder, Mikey Weinstein.
More like Mikey Weinerstein.
Right. He condemns the display at the commissary in Fairfax County. He said, I can't make this shit up. Christmas Force is next to a sign that says, God bless America. And you can't see it in the photo. Almost all the complaints like that lead to come to this. So basically what has happened is that people are so triggered by the use of God that they're going to complain. I'm not a God-believing fella. I don't believe in God. And I do not care if Santa holds a sign that says, God bless America. I mean, for fuck's sake, they say it everywhere. Like, it's on the money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember, too, in Camp Pendleton, we had this hill that it's remote. It's in the middle of nowhere at the very edge. And you can see it from the I-5 highway and into Camp Pendleton. And you look up this massive hill and you see there's two 13-foot crosses up on the hill. And that's the spot where, when you come home from deployment, I know that that's where we hiked up to that mountain. And that was the spot where we left. Like, we had stones with our mm-hmm. buddies' names on it. And you carry all sorts of liquor bottles and all sorts of stuff up there. What?
I'm just reading through the rest of the story while you're saying that. Because there's a dude named Mike Berry who was on Fox News. And he says, it appears Mikey Weinstein thinks that the inflatable Santa Claus is an actual military officer who speaks for the government. Even if that were true, service members are permitted to say God bless America just as the commander-in-chief does on a routine basis.
Yeah. So they have – and by the way, I'll circle back to the – Camp Pendleton, there's these crosses on the hill, and that same group was like, you can't make troops like the – but we had groups of – I'm not of the religious persuasion either, and I didn't mind hiking up there if it brought comfort to some of my brothers and sisters in arms. To go up there, whatever, and spend a moment there. I didn't go over to the crosses or spend a moment. If you want to resurrect a giant pentagram next to it, go to town for all I care. Whatever. Right. I also get having Christianity does get shoved down your throat in the military. At certain times it does. But like,
in what way? I'm asking, what do you think?
I think you just get
like chaplains, for example. Okay. Like the idea of religious, like,
or putting religion on your dog tags.
Yeah, there is very like religious undertones, and that's been it's part of history. I have no issue with that either, because I think a majority of people do subscribe to some type of religious ideals. But I think that whenever you're going and complaining, God bless America on Santa Claus, this is a classic case of making your last ditch stand in the wrong fucking ditch.
And I feel like it just makes everybody hate you, man. Like, right.
just
like, shut up.
Just let
loser.
It go. Because also, like what you just said, Chaps, what you said, I know the word God is in the comment, but God bless America is...
it's a trite statement.
Yeah, at this point, it's on...
This would be different if Santa's holding a sign that says, we plead the blood of Jesus over America.
Right.
Like, that's a little different.
Yeah.
I will say, if it said, dog bless America, I would be much more prone to buy it.
Unless a dog has it.
I also want to say these pluffer, this is about to be a very unpopular opinion. These, my family calls them pluffer, lawn pluffers, because they're the blow-up ones. You plug them in the yard, and half the day it looks like you have colorful trash bags just laying on your yard. And then you plug them in, they
and
light
God
up.
God forget, bid one of them gets really wet.
Forget it. They're never going to pluff back up. I think they look horrible. If I see them in your yard, I think they're a trashy person.
Can I say this?
Oh, yeah. No, these are, if you have these decorations in your yard, you are white trash. Flat out.
I have some.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Well,
one
exactly.
Of them, the shoe one fits. Of them is a llama. One of them is Snoopy. And I believe we also have, and this one really fucking hits your point home, Cons, Hello Kitty.
Yeah, absolute dirtbag move. I mean, your neighbors must be
high. Oh, my God.
And it's all my wife. Like, she doesn't listen to this pod or anything I've ever done. So
thank God. I
can
don't want her
say
to hate
it.
Me.
She, I think, to me, Christmas decorations, like outside lights, bullshit. Dude, in my neighborhood, 3 weekends in a row. This poor fella's up on a ladder. Yeah. He's getting nuts. He's still doing it. Christmas is like 2 weeks away.
Clark Griswold,
if I'm doing that work, motherfucker, I'm starting in June.
Yeah, seriously,
you're
getting my money's worth.
My handiwork for almost an entire year.
Yeah.
2 weeks for all the work that I'm putting in? When prime, it's like prime football time where you're going down to conference championship. You're talking about you're going into NFL playoffs. The playoff hunt is on. And I'm up on a ladder plugging in some lights that I hate and staples.
Couldn't be me.
Not the staples.
This is 100% true. Annalise puts out all of our Christmas lights. I refuse.
Yeah.
It's the only time that I really put my foot down. She's like, Can you come out and help me? And I am like, no.
No, thanks.
You can spend as much money on all these lights as you want to. I will not help with a single light.
You know what I really like? I like the candles in the window.
Not real, though.
No, certainly not real candles.
Fire
like the,
safety
the,
prevention.
The fake candles. We always did that growing up, and I always thought that looked very nice.
My dad, my neighbor, developed. I always thought they should have gone on Shark Tank. Growing up, they developed 2 broomsticks duct taped together. And then at the very end of the one broomstick, so you have this long-ass stick, you take a hanger and you curve it into a Y shape and you duct tape that to the top. Then you put the lights on the Y and you hoist it up and put it up in your trees. That way you don't have to get on a ladder.
Oh, so it's just like a way to assist putting the lights into the tree.
Sounds like your family is just full of Lance Corporals.
Yeah.
Honestly.
We have police call the yard every holiday.
Yeah, we get online.
We put them up there. Staff Sergeant Dan.
Oh, Dan.
This recruit lost
the blow-up llama.
Most of the lights went out in the whole strand. So anyway, there's that. But yeah, now I would never put this God Bless America Santa in my yard for a couple of reasons. The beard would never fly in uniform. 2, the red hat doesn't go with the camo at all. Makes no sense.
He's well out of regs.
3, the raccoon. Your staff sergeant, if they saw you with one, would lose their shit 110%. And 3, God Bless America. To each his own.
To each their own. What rank would Santa be?
Ooh. Santa... Santa's a reservist. He only works part-time.
He's totally, you're right.
He's a reservist?
Santa's a reservist. Santa's a reservist.
Yeah, that's his 2 weeks a year. Like whenever he's actually out there.
I would agree. All right. I agree he's a reservist, but I think he's been around long enough. He's a brigadier general.
Oh,
No.
What do you say?
I think we're on the same page here.
One, two, three. Lieutenant
Chief
Colonel.
Warrant Officer.
Oh.
Because Chief Warrant Officers are...
Lieutenant Colonel, okay.
No, Chief Warrant Officers are mysterious. You never know where they are half the time. You don't quite understand what
they are.
You know,
that's true because he's not involved in, like, I guess if you're going to be a lieutenant colonel, you'd be involved in a fleet of reindeer that were flying around all over the place. A Chief Warrant Officer only has one helicopter that they're in charge of.
Right.
I don't think that Santa's ready for a fixed-wing sleigh.
No.
I think that it's just going to be a rotary sleigh. So he can go around
with that. I just think he's got so many elves to the point that it's got to be a division-sized element. So that's why I'm saying BG. And he doesn't really do anything, so he just kind of like oversees it, and then he does a little work on one day of the year. That's kind of like just going out to different events and waving your hat and saying,
"You think
hey.
Santa gives the elf safety briefs?"
Yes,
definitely,
for sure.
All right, you motherfuckers, we got a lot of Etch-A-Sketches this year. Make sure you're wearing your damn eye pro.
Staff Sergeant, this recruit forgot to put chop blocks under the sled.
Was involved with making a bunch
too much
of
eggnog.
Jacoby
on the weekend, and we.
Yeah, imagine that. Imagine how much eggnog the elves go through the day after Christmas.
A little elf fucking stand at parade rest.
Whoa, staff, this recruit. Whoa, boy.
All right.
Boy, what an episode this was. Yeah. What a mixed bag.
We turned it around. I mean, we don't like to do full out episodes where we're talking about serious shit, but Afghanistan, man.
It's serious. We're a military podcast, and our country is still
People
at
are
war.
Still fucking dying, dude.
Yes, this
it's
is
It's not
true.
Okay. It really is what it comes down to. It's not okay, and the fact that people have continued to just allow us to be there, and it seems as though everyone's just content to say, well, I don't want to be the one to come up with an idea to get us out of there. Or maybe they aren't. I just don't know it. But the fact that we're still there is crazy.
And I think a lot of people know, and this might just be the coping juice talking, people know that I'm not the biggest Trump fan in the world. If President Trump says before the next election that we're going to withdraw every troop from Afghanistan and actually does it, they actually leave, not just say it.
You'll shave your beard again.
No, I'll give him a hand job. One free hand job.
Bare hand?
Oh, yeah. Oh, come on. I'm a gentleman.
Okay.
A condom hand? Like a rubber glove? You know how long that would take?
All right. I mean, that would be awful for both of you.
I don't know. I knew that endurance. His dick would be shaped as shit.
All right. Well.
All right. Let's move on to save rounds. Console star with you.
I wasn't here last week. We don't need to get into why I wasn't here. We'll leave that alone. But since the uniforms for Army have come out, you guys have seen them now. To the point that you were recording last week, you were just taking my word for it that they were great. What are your thoughts for the Army-Navy game? Army's uniforms.
They're good. I think they're good. I mean, you hit it whenever you text us and you said that I would like it because of We Were Soldiers.
Yep.
I'm a big We Were Soldiers guy. I think, and if you're a new listener to the show, I think We Were Soldiers is the single best military movie of all time. I love it.
Well, that really didn't answer your question about the uniforms that quickly.
No, he said he liked them.
The Navy's look like absolute
dog shit. That's what I wanted to hear from you. Yeah, I wanted a reiteration that Navy uniforms are. The boots, like the little booties they're wearing on the field. What the hell is that?
Terrible. You have like four different shades of yellow going.
Yeah, what are you doing with that? Under Armour's got to be better. It reminded me of when the LA Rams did it. Yeah. When they had like 18 shades of blue. Yeah. It's gray, fella.
Well,
50 of them.
I just really, I really like the video with the older gentleman, the lieutenant or the colonel. Talking about the eye drain.
Even though you texted it 19 times, I never watched it. Never will.
Yeah, me neither. I said not
you
today.
You would like it. I promise you would like it.
But Saturday, December 14th, 1 p.m. Eastern time, is our tailgate for the troops near Lot N, as in...
Nancy,
oh, my phone's
November.
Going off. Pardon me. Lot N, as in, nope, not a boy. That's my mom calling. Ha ha. What a shame. 3899 South Darien Street outside Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, PA. We're going to be there. Dave, Big Cat, Brandon Walker, Casey Smith, they're all going to be there. It's going to be a real, I was about to say, hop tootie hootin' tootin' time, but maybe that'll keep people away.
No,
it's going to be a real zingamadoo. It's really going to bring them in for the hot show. But if you're in the Philly area, please come out and say hello. We love, love, love meeting our listeners and saying hi and mingling.
And I have an official announcement.
What?
About the Army-Navy game. This will be my first time ever wearing duck boots at a game.
Whoa!
Yeah. I packed my wife bought them for me. Got some London Fog, no free ads, duck boots that I'm excited to wear. Hopefully my feet get super fucked up because I felt the bottom. I don't know how people don't slip slide all over the place wearing them.
No, you're going to be very much hurt.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, cons?
That was my save round about the uniform. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I think the Navy uniforms suck. I'm going to boo them in person but cheer on the people inside the uniforms because I do hope they win and beat Army. I feel like if you're wearing a shit uniform like that, you better win. My God.
Yeah.
What a horrendous thing.
Embarrassment.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Anyways, that's my saved round.
All right. My saved round is, as many of the listeners know, if you follow me at all on social media too, and I occasionally mention it here, that I'm from Pensacola. Like, I was born in Jacksonville, but I went to high school in Pensacola. I went to Tate High School, which is just outside of the city limits in Pensacola. It's cantonment. My stepdad worked at NAS Pensacola. He taught at the school, the electrician school, for whenever people were coming into the Navy. NAS Pensacola is a big tech school for a lot of kids just coming into the Navy, or young men, young women coming into the Navy, where they go to learn their craft. It's not just that side, but it's the aviation side as well. So hearing news of a shooting hit home, like legitimately, for me. And that's not to take anything for myself at all. But hearing the news of what happened there whenever there was an active shooter hit a little bit deeper. And we wanted to mention the names of Ensign Joshua Caleb Watson, Airman Muhammad Samah Haytham, Airman Apprentice Cameron Scott Walters. I think saying their names out loud is incredibly important. I've seen a lot of articles written about them. The Army-Navy game this week, Ensign Watson went to the Naval Academy, and seeing the stories that came out about him, that he was heroic even as a young age. He was assigned to be the deck officer. He was the officer of the day there and heard the gunshots going. And there's a Marine trope that says that we run to the sounds of the guns. That's exactly what Watson did. He ran to the sounds of the guns. There's going to be a lot of times that we're talking about the Army and the Navy game being a rivalry. When it all comes down to it, we are a family and brother in arms, sister in arms, where we take each other and we take the responsibility to the man or the woman to your left and your right. And we take that as a moment to know that we are serving something greater than ourselves. Even though we spent much time talking about the things that went on in Afghanistan and how that has been a quagmire, it's not a quagmire for those boots on the ground. We have always been there for each other. We will always be there for each other. And Ensign Watson and the others that were killed this week showed that to the fullest. So we want to thank them for their service and their sacrifice to the country. We owe them a debt of gratitude for being willing to put their lives on the line. It just sucks beyond all recognition that it happened to be on American soil. Sound the retreat.
That was beautifully said.
Mm-hmm.